Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much.
We made changes yesterday. I still hold that this is the governor's plan to provide significant property tax relief for real property owners in the great state of Florida. Yesterday, the committee voted to only apply the new super homestead exemption to non-school taxes.
Yeah, that's the biggest change that went through. We talked about this yesterday, that they decided not to cut the part that would have made them be on the hook for having to fund it at the state level. It's only the parts that have cities and counties on the hook for finding other funding or making cuts themselves, which I think is interesting because have school budgets been fantastic and has the school spent the money well? You know, because the argument is the state of Florida has spent its money well and kept ourselves restrained, even in increasing inflation and population. Local and counties have not done the same. They've just taken the money and spent it. Which one would be true of the schools districts? Would they have spent their money cautiously, prudently, carefully, or have they also? I mean, that's a question, right? So why is it that the school one is the one that gets cut? So half of the cut has gone away, or the half the cut got cut. You're back to a half a cut. I don't know, whatever. Six mills, basically, is no longer on the table. So for every $100,000, that's every $100,000. Every $100,000, you drop the six, that's... Anyway, 437-1620, 437-1620. Brian Avila, yesterday, senator running the bill in the Senate and doing a great job avoiding questions that he didn't want to answer and saying it's the governor's bill, but he's running it, so whatever. This hokey-pokey game, I can't stand it all the time.
The current joint resolution provides a new super homestead exemption for every Floridian who was a permanent resident as of December 31st, 2026. Beginning on January 1st, 2027, the first $150,000 of the assessed value is exempt. Beginning on January 1st, 2028, the first $250,000 of the assessed value is exempt.
So that's the progression, and this has been a little bit murky, not in terms of how I've been explaining, but in terms of how it's been covered a lot, I think, is and the language in the bill doesn't say that either, which is kind of a problem. The step up, that the first year it's 150, then eventually it's 250.
New Floridians who establish permanent residence on or after January 1st, 2027 will be eligible for a new increase exemption. Beginning January 1st, 2027, the first $50,000 of assessed value is exempt. Beginning with the fifth year of receiving the exemption, the homesteader will receive the full $250,000 exemption amount.
And that's part of it, too, is that if you're a non-resident, you move here after next January, then you have to kind of go through a five-year period of paying property taxes at the old rate, the current rate, and then you'll get the full exemption thereafter.
Over time, the $250,000 super exemption and the $50,000 new homesteader exemptions are increased annually for inflation. This helps keeps the exemptions from losing value over time.
I like those terms, super homesteader exemption and new homesteader exemption. That's the current one. You might think of it that way.
The third action for property tax relief is provided by requiring counties, municipalities to increase the amount of the homestead exemption, allowing them to provide up to the full elimination of property taxes on homesteaders in their jurisdictions. The legislature would set the uniform procedure for those provisions.
There you go. So it will go up, and they can make it even higher, like locals can make it even higher. They just cannot make it lower than this. Some key questions. Okay, key questions. Don Gates had a lot in the conversation yesterday in the Senate. Our senator, of course, senator for District 1. For example, there's no addressing of spending. Meaning if spending is not addressed, yes, the city or the county is going to lose all this revenue and you're going to keep it in your pocket. But can they not just shift the revenue generation to some other source?
Seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the proposed joint resolution does not deal with spending in local government. It deals with taxes by local government. So consequently, is it not the case that there is no guarantee that local government won't do what many have pointed out that they want done, and that is to whatever tax reductions are made are simply backfilled by increases in fees and increases in other costs to the taxpayers. So could you give me some comfort that we will not be seeing the same taxpayers who get a tax reduction turning around and discovering that they're also facing significant fee increases to backfill, so that there's not, I want to make sure that it is not your intention that that there's just a tax shift as a result of this joint resolution.
And this has been one of the criticisms, is there's no replacement for the funding. There's no alternative mechanism. There's no loosening of the rules that are very tight on what cities and counties can do to raise revenue. And Senator Gates has taken the other position, saying we don't want there to be any ability to shift this. We want them to make cuts. We want reductions in expenses and, or reductions in services, but we want them to get back within the spending limits that are comparable for population and inflation, just like the state itself has done over the years. Brian Avalos, answer to the question.
I really sincerely doubt that after they do their due diligence, that all of a sudden they are just going to dramatically increase fees and throw on I don't know how many special assessments. I think that once they are now forced to go through that exercise that we go through on a yearly basis, I think that we're going to have something that is a lot more aligned with our budgetary practices and procedures that have made this state successful.
So again, there's nothing in there forcing this. Cities and if it passes, okay, cities and counties could try to just make up the money through MSBUs, right? There was a really good post yesterday by a legislator who explained, you know, what you're looking at for the future here is instead of seeing an overall tax bill, you know, of the stuff that you're accustomed to seeing right now, Jeff Brandis said instead of a property tax bill for $4,000, you could see a fire assessment for $385, solid waste assessment for $425, stormwater for $210, public safety for $575, like, you know, MSBUs. Now, that would have to be for infrastructure. As I understand, I don't think you can do those for recurring costs and salary and things like that. But, you know, that's one possibility. This might get a big old breakout on your tax bill of what you're all paying for. And they could shift it all to these other forms of assessment, either MSBUs or maybe per square footage, because that's not the same as per valorem, ad valorem. Or it could be through other kinds of fees. We don't know. But, you know, what Don Gates is hoping is that they will not happen, that they will just find all of the right waste, fraud, abuse, overspending, and mismanagement and get rid of it. And, of course, what everybody locally is saying is, you're crazy. You know, we already try to do that, and we don't find it. We'll come back to this in a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. We're back to rolling accident-free, even delay-free, seeing nothing that's going to slow you down. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives. And traffic is brought to you by Florida West. Every Florida West project is evaluated on jobs created, wages paid, and generates a positive return on investment to Escambia County taxpayers.
All right, John, thanks so much for the update. I am curious, as we're talking about this today, this is the big, I mean, this is huge stuff for Florida, for local, for city, county, everybody. And that's why we're talking about it so much today, particularly. We'll talk about it more before the election. But I want to know your reaction. You know, are you excited about this? You want to vote no? You want to vote yes? What's your view? I'm kind of curious where you stand on this. Are you frustrated they did not include the school board? I have a lot of thoughts about that, but for the moment, let's get back to Don Gates talking about this in the Senate yesterday. And one of the things he brought up is maybe next year we would indulge in a TABOR, that's a taxpayer bill of rights, what Colorado has done. That limits state spending to whatever population and inflation says. And then I think if I understand the TABOR system properly, and what at least Don Gates meant is not just as a gross number, what your budget has to, your general fund budget from property tax has to be, but even the specific silos within that, you know, law enforcement has to be this much and fire has to be this much. And at least I think that's how that was meant to work. And that's another form of control by the state if that's what he intends to do. So looking at the overall proposal as it came before the Senate, Don Gates is not just an, gosh, I'll vote for it and hold my nose. He is enthusiastic about this.
I think, well, it's fine to criticize the governor for coming in late, at least he came in. I wish we would have had his bill earlier. I wish we'd had the redistricting bill a little earlier. But the hard fact is we've got the bill, and that's the only bill we have. It is the only bill we have.
Nobody else has filed one. And for all the griping and grousing about nobody put forward an alternative bill and we didn't have enough time to deal with it, he's like, we've been talking about this for months. What's your problem? If you wanted something else, you should have proposed it.
And so the question then becomes, if we cannot do something about everything, should we do nothing about anything? And I think the answer to that ought to be obvious. We have an opportunity here to do something about a key pressure on affordability in Florida, and that's property taxes. And we can be mad at the governor because he didn't come in sooner. I'm happy that the governor came in at all. I'm happy that he brought his proposal to us.
This is dealing with, you know, the response or context here was, well, we're not solving home insurance. We're not solving all kinds of other things that people are dealing with affordability. And he says, yeah, but we're working on this. And we're not even solving this because still the school board, right? There's all and commercial property. You know, why should you have to pay rent on your home? Well, why should you have to pay rent on the building that you also own? I mean, same argument would apply. And why should you have to pay it to the school board when you don't have to pay it to the county? Same arguments. And he's like, look, this is better than nothing. And at least he proposed a bill. Where's your bill?
Some of my colleagues have said that there's going to be a significant tax shift, that that's what this is all about. I hope not. I may be very much in the minority on this issue, but my concern is that there may be a tax shift. A tax shift because I think it's always easier to look for another way to spend money as opposed to another way to save money.
Right. I mean, that's certainly possible, although I would use a slightly different phraseology. You know, it's better look for they're going to look for another source of revenue as opposed to a way to cut, right? But you get the point.
Over the past several years, local governments have been the beneficiary of the days of milk and honey. They've gotten extraordinary increases in the amount of money that they have available to spend, and they spent it. And, you know, plenty could be criticized about the way the legislature does business or about the way that that I vote. But at least we've reduced spending because we knew we had to, because we had to live within our means. And families have had to do it, and businesses have had to do it, because we're in a situation right now of some economic uncertainty, to say the least. And so now we're asking local governments to do the same thing. Frankly, I hope that they do. But I don't believe necessarily that they will.
So even though he wants, and his view, and several other senators' view, right, and other legislators as well, is that the state has behaved and kept its budgets tight and, you know, even shrinking slightly. Meanwhile, at the local level, they've just taken the money and spent it and have not been responsible. Now, I having talked to a lot of these local legislators, I'm not saying Don Gates hasn't. I'm just saying I have, and they are convinced that there's no way to keep the cost down to the level that the state is wanting them to keep it down to. But he says, we want cuts. We don't want them to just shift it to somewhere else. They have been taking this money and, you know, as he calls it, we are in the days of milk and honey and we got to prepare for something else.
And so I'm going to support language of the kind that Senator Avila and I discussed in my question to him. It might be a Tabor or something like that to make sure we don't have a tax shift.
That's that Colorado rule.
That we don't say to the people whose taxes we're now saying we're going to lower. Well, yeah, we're going to lower your taxes, but we're going to increase your garbage fees and increase your fire fees and increase everything else that we can think of so that we don't have to make the tough decisions. Because this won't be popular, I know, with some of my local government friends, and I served on a school board for 6 years. But I can tell you there are tough decisions that have to be made in local government, just like in state government and just like in businesses and just like in families.
Okay. I like Don a lot. I respect him a lot. But the specific claim that I understand this pain, I served on a school board, meanwhile, this proposal doesn't eliminate your school board taxes, really irked me. Because if local governments are supposed to be more responsible and make cuts, why does that same philosophy not apply to the schools? Let me put it simply. If it's wrong to make you pay annual rent to the city or county on the home you own and live in, why is it okay if the value of your house is really high, like it's above the $250,000, right? Why is it okay if it's a $1 million house? When does it become okay to make you pay rent on your house? The philosophy being, you know, we shouldn't be making people pay rent on their house. If it's wrong to make you pay annual rent to the city or county on the home you own and live in, your homestead, why is it okay if you choose to let someone else live in that home and pay you rent? Why are commercial properties exempted? Renters. Because, by the way, this is just going to make rents higher. Because you got to imagine commercial property tax is going to go up, at least somewhat. The people who rent are the people who can't afford to buy a house typically. So now you're talking about the poorer end of the socioeconomic spectrum are going to be paying more. They're going to be paying for this. And then third, is it if it's wrong to make you pay annual rent to the city or county on the home you own and live in your homestead, why is it okay to make you pay rent to the school board? And are the school boards not equally obligated to be better at cutting and slashing and hacking? And I mean, you know, that's have their budgets not soared also? So I have a lot of objections to it. What's my overall, like, how will I vote? Oh, man, it's super tempting to vote for a big old payday and see whether the county and the city might not figure out a way to save a bunch of money.
At the end of the day, I have a choice between providing some relief, and I think significant relief, to people who are facing an increasing affordability crisis in Florida, or providing no relief. And I'm going to vote for something so that I don't go home with nothing.
Am I going to vote for the status quo? No. Or am I going to vote for, hey, let's take a risk and see what happens? let's save a bunch of money on the front end, and let's see how bad it gets and whether we want to, you know, change this later on. That's basically the question that you're going to be asking. 625 on News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. Still rolling accident-free, even delay-free. I-10, I-110, 90-98 all look good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Speaking of property taxes, if you're going to buy or sell a home, you want a great realtor who's going to get you a good deal, who's going to get the deal done, who has the kind of knowledge that comes from experience where they know intuitively, hey, you know, I think that this paint color is going to get in the way of you selling this home. Why? It's fine. It's local coastal yellow. I know, but trust me, you know, let's repaint it. Lo and behold, the house sells real fast. Easy. That's the point. Through many, 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 209 homes sold last year, and in the 200 vicinity sold for basically every year for the last several years. It was over 200 for a while, then it was 175, then it was 165, but back to 209 last year. Four homes a week. That's a lot of experience. Recognizing what works, knowing what doesn't work, avoiding the problems, and getting you all the way through to closing with the best price possible in the shortest time possible. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke Realty.
In a world of payroll and HR services, things can get complicated. There are so many moving parts in business. At Avalon HR, we understand, and we have your back. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we guide you through the complicated world of payroll and HR services. Running a business is busy work. Allow Avalon HR to work with you. Join us today on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Making a few small changes to how you use energy in your home can make a big difference. Like setting your AC. Every degree you raise it can save you up to 5% on cooling costs. With the FPL Energy Manager, you can easily monitor how much energy you're using, see which appliances use the most, and how it affects your bill. Keep more money in your pocket by making your home more energy efficient. Learn more at fpl.com/ways to save.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do, and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
Our Senators Ashley Moody and Rick Scott and Representative Jimmy Patronis are standing up for radio listeners like us by supporting legislation to keep AM radio in cars. They know the value of local radio in times of emergency. Now it's time for Congress to finish the job and pass the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act. Learn more at dependonam.com. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Talking about it. We're talking about it.
The midterm elections.
Who will win? Who will not?
It'll all be covered on News Radio 92.3.
Costa del Ex, Lutherville, Marina del Ex, Otisburg. Otisburg?
Who's Tess Mottrick? She's got her own place, man.
Otisburg?
It's a little bitty place.
Otisburg?
I love the colorful clothes she wears. And the way the sunlight plays upon her hair.
Good morning, 6:29 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. You gotta let it pay off, right?
I'm picking up good vibrations.
Yeah. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. A tense, hours-long hostage situation is continuing to unfold in California. Apparently, two hostages have been released in what's being described as an active bomb threat situation in a bank in Bakersfield. Police say there's still an unknown number of people in the bank, and the man that's been holding them there since yesterday apparently has a bomb strapped to his body, so we'll be watching that. The U.S. and Iran have been exchanging missile fire over the Persian Gulf despite a shaky ceasefire. Reports out of the region say Iran began firing missiles at U.S. allies after the U.S. attacked an oil tanker bound for an Iranian port that did not comply with the blockade.
All right, David, thank you so much for the update. Oh, the senior chill-out is coming this Friday, the annual Pete Moore Automotive Team Senior Chill-Out, one-day donation drive for new air conditioners, fans, and funds to help seniors beat the heat. It'll be this Friday at 5 area Lowe's stores, Fairfield Airport, 9 Mile in Pensacola, Highway 98 in Gulf Breeze, and Highway 90 in Pace, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., put on by the Council on Aging West Florida in partnership with WAR, our sister station, Cat Country 98.7, News Radio, and Lowe's Home Improvement Stores.
News. I'm Chris Foster. The primary for California governor is undecided. The top two finishers advance, and Republican Steve Hilton leads the ballot count so far.
We are going to make California the best place in the world to start and run a business, to start and raise a family. This is the place.
Democrat Javier Becerra is in second place ahead of Democrat Tom Steyer.
California is the richest state in the richest country in the history of the world. It's unacceptable that right now so many Californians struggle to make ends meet.
Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass advances to the general election in her race against either Republican Spencer Pratt or another Democrat, Nitya Roman. In Iowa, Trump-backed House Republican Ashley Hinson wins her Senate primary and will face Democrat Josh Turek in November. At least one person's killed and Kuwait's main airport is badly damaged in an Iranian drone attack. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 72 degrees with cloudy skies at the moment. We'll get a full look at our forecast from Channel 3 and Brooke Richardson in just a few minutes. While Florida lawmakers sent a property tax cut constitutional amendment to November's ballot yesterday, Pensacola Mayor D.C. Reeves says beyond the $6.4 million local impact, the real issue is who controls city funding. Going forward,
your local government will now need to be, under this format, would need to be marching down to Tallahassee with a tin cup, and we're going to have to come ask every year and play that game. It's about coming up with the most logical, common sense way to be able to ensure that the police cars can show up at your house, that the firefighters can put the fire out at your house, and that we can fill potholes and we can keep 95 parks and 11 community centers running.
And that from Mayor D.C. Reeves' press conference yesterday morning. The measure did pass. The tax cut measure did pass the House 75-26 and the Senate 30-9 yesterday, raising the homestead exemption from $50,000 to $150,000 next year and $250,000 in 2028 with school levies carved out. Of course, that is if it gets 60% voter approval in November. Statewide, local governments would face projected losses of about $4.6 billion annually, rising to $8.4 billion. The Orange Beach homeless drop-off dispute might be resolved. Commissioner Ashley Hofberger, though, says it did expose an even bigger problem. She told Channel 3 that Escambia County has become a destination for homeless individuals transported from across the region.
We see buses coming from the Birmingham-Montgomery area dropping people off. I know that there's a few religious folks over in Bay County that bring people over in buses and drop them off. So it's not unique to law enforcement.
Hofberger says she wants a formal policy in place for managing out-of-area individuals at local shelters and wants the community to have transparency about who receives services at the Waterfront Mission. Escambia County and Orange Beach both committed this week to ending cross-border homeless transportation. Well, 43 new artificial reefs are now on the bottom of the Gulf off of Pensacola. Escambia County Marine Resources and Walter Marine deployed 217 concrete modules across the new sites. located about 4.5 nautical miles from Pensacola Pass in 45 to 55 feet of water. The project was funded through Deepwater Horizon restoration money and a Florida Fish and Wildlife grant. One reef was privately funded by friends and family of the late local charter captain, Eddie Lively. Coordinates for the new sites are all available at myescambia.com/artificial reefs. Escambia Fire Rescue is looking for more Florida-certified firefighters. They're holding a physical abilities testing on June 15th. That'll be at 8 a.m. at Pensacola Fire Station 4 on North Q Street. If you're interested in that job, you have to apply for the position before registering for the test at myescambia.com/careers. And those who pass the test then will get a job interview for it the next day. Those interested in taking the test are asked to arrive about 30 minutes early to sign in. It is 6:35 at News Radio 92.3. John's got our traffic on the fives.
That's right. Brought to you by ECUA, making service easier with the new My ECUA mobile app. Available to download now. Pay your bill, report service issues, alerts, and recycling tips. Still rolling accident-free right now. Not seeing anything that's going to slow you down. 90, 98, all look good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
We are going to be seeing those temperatures slightly cooler today with some cloudy skies. 81 degrees with a 10% chance of a stray shower. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 70 degrees. For Thursday, sunny skies, high near 82. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 73. Heading into Friday, 20% chance of a stray shower, high near 83 degrees. And Friday night, temperatures dropping near 73. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Cloudy skies, 71 in Pensacola, 72 in Milton, 74 in Gulf Breeze. Your next news at 7, and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Treasury yields edged higher this morning as traders await a fresh batch of domestic economic data, while events in the Middle East also continue to weigh on market sentiment. Yields on the 10-year Treasury note were more than 2 basis points higher at 4.4768%. Barclays predicts that humanoid robots are expected to grow to a $200 billion market in less than a decade. Wedbush's Dan Ives told CNBC he sees the market being worth trillions of dollars in the next 10 years. China is currently far outpacing the U.S. in the development of the technology. Macy's raised its full-year guidance after posting better-than-expected fiscal first-quarter results. During the quarter, comparable sales grew 3%, the strongest first-quarter performance in 4 years. CEO Tony Spring told CNBC in an interview that the company is reinvesting in the fundamentals, like better staffing and assortment, to drive sales. Futures are mixed after all three major indexes closed at record highs again yesterday. That's Your Money Now.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
ZipRecruiter.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us on Friday at 9:30 with me, Eldon Sky, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Sky, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Tune into Transcending the Money Myth, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than just investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Transcending the Money Myth, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sunday at 1 p.m. Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC, registered advisors.
I'm in the shower, and I've got News Radio on the app.
Commissioner Kerry Smith at the Santa Rosa County Commissioner meeting.
All of a sudden, I hear Andrew McKay with this dire report about explosions going on over Santa Rosa County. And I'm like, what? My wife's running into the bathroom. And I'm like, look out the window. And about that time, Andrew McKay tells us that it was a drill that we did yesterday here for the emergency management.
Totally involved in our community. Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
It don't matter, he's dope, he knows that, but he's pro. He's so stagnant, he knows when he goes back to this mobile home. That's when it's back to the lab again, yo. This old rhapsody better go capture this moment and hope it don't do it. Lose yourself in the music, the moment you own it. You better never let it go. You only get one shot, do not miss your chance to blow. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime.
By our calculations, a homestead exemption of $250,000 would be a $6.4 million cut to our general fund. Estimated loss in year one would be just over $4 million, and year two would be just under $2.4 million. And that's based on our calculations from the tax rolls, and it may not include the more recently released data by the property appraiser.
Yeah, the number of people that this will affect and the hit to the budget in Pensacola if the property tax referendum, as approved by the state, House and the Senate yesterday, goes through and gets voted on by 60% or more is pretty significant. You know, $6 million to the city's budget, which you might think, oh, they got a big budget, $300 million or more. What's $6 million one way or the other? Well,
literally the majority of the dollars that go into our general fund, the largest funder of the general fund is property tax. 60% of what we spend in the general fund is on police and fire.
Right, and you can't just raise it some other way, despite the things that have been kind of said at the state level.
I can tell you how these conversations normally go when we point out the amount of money in property tax that helps fund public safety. We'll get a retort from a citizen that says, well, that's okay. You can just, you know, collect it some other way. Well, the state legislature has already limited local government's ability to collect it any other way. So, unfortunately, in the court of public opinion, there's this idea that we can now mythically create a tax that would be an offset. We are not legally allowed to do that, nor do we think that that's really the best way to do it, even if you could. But nonetheless, to again inform and educate the citizens that there is not a lever that a local government. This is how, for the last, 100 years or so, this is how money was collected, is through property tax.
Yeah, we've been doing it this way for forever, and then all of a sudden we're going to do it a completely different way over the course of what he keeps calling a three-day weekend. You know, like, that's going to change the entire course of the economy of the state. I mean, it has to actually go through the election in November. But, yeah, it'll be a major change. And, you know, what will cities and counties do? What happens when they need funding for something that previously could have been covered by that ad valorem tax revenue? Well, they'll have to go to the state and beg for it somehow or other.
Obviously, what we're setting up for here is the idea that local governments and local counties, your local government will now need to be, under this format, would need to be marching down to Tallahassee with a tin cup, and we're going to have to come ask every year and play that game and figure out how much money is going to be offset under the current format right now.
Please, sir, could I have another pothole fixed? Please, sir, we need another air conditioning unit for the community center. Please, sir, think about the children.
I mean, you know, I don't think he's totally wrong. This came up in the Senate and the House a little bit in conversation. You know, what's your expectation? They'll come beg from you for the money. And by the way, they got rid of the special fund to backstop some of the poorer counties where, you know, they're primarily dependent on homestead ad valorem taxes. And, you know, they got rid of that, too. So the security net, safety net that was built into this in the first proposal that DeSantis offered, that's been gotten rid of. I don't necessarily disagree with getting rid of it, but, you know, that's not there. Also, it's still in the language, by the way.
Listen, I think looking at, I think you guys know me well enough in every department in our city. I think looking at ways to modernize the way we do things, I'm always open to. So to me, this is less about a discussion about property tax, should it or shouldn't it be.
and more about how we do it, right? And he says it. I'm not against property tax reform.
And again, the way that you vilify local governments is you is that when we push back and we say this is how much money we're going to lose, say, oh, well, it's waste. Oh, well, you know, you shouldn't have to continue to pay that. Okay, well, let's have a holistic discussion around how that should work. We've done this for decades. And then now over a long weekend, we're going to figure out that we want to completely change the format of how governments are funded. So in my opinion, this is not the mayor saying whether we should or shouldn't have some type of modernization of property tax or some type of relief. I want to be clear about that. But what's being intentionally lost in this conversation is you must either be for or against.
Right, which is an oversimplification. He's just saying, hey, let's have a meaningful conversation. Let's do the million-dollar study that would have kind of anticipated some of the objections, thought about how local governments are going to react to all this, what they're going to do.
Just to give you an example, our budget to stat, you remember $4 million cut first year, 2.4 the second year, which would be a recurring 6.4 under what's proposed now. Our budget to staff and run community centers is 2.8 million. So just all of them, all 11. That's staff, that's the facilities, that's everything. That's where our seniors go, it's where our children play. And the landscaping upkeep maintenance budget, not if anything breaks, but just our normal upkeep is about 1.3 million at night, our 95 parks. So if you just want to look at that, that's 4.1 million. So all maintenance of 95 parks, all operations of community centers, is about that amount that we would lose instantly.
Now, he's not saying that all the park funding and all the community center funding is going to go away if this passes. He's just trying to give you a perspective on what $6 million as a loss to the general revenue fund means every year. That's the total amount that it takes to maintain the community centers and the parks.
On the public works side, stormwater to keep neighborhood streets from flooding. So our entire stormwater budget to attack that as part of the general fund was 2.7 million. Street traffic, lighting, and intersections had 1.4 million budgeted this year. So same thing. So if you don't care about stormwater, street traffic, lights, or intersections, then 4 million may not be much to you. But those are some of the recurring items that come out of our general fund.
And again, 60% of that general fund revenue goes to pay for first responders, you know, PPD and PFD. I think we're going to have a lot of conversations about where the money goes. There are going to be a lot of people who say, you waste my money, and I don't want to keep giving you as much of it as I have been. I'm willing to take either reduced services or, you know, just be better, you know. And they like the idea of throwing a fairly significant cut against the local government and getting paid for it. I mean, you're going to keep your property taxes unless you're a renter, in which case it's not so much of an impact for you, and it also might actually cost you money because it's very likely that local governments are going to shift the cost where they can, which is going to be onto commercial property, non-homesteaded property, which would include homes put out for rent. We'll come back to this in a second. Your thoughts, 437-1620. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. Still rolling accident-free, but if you're on 9 Mile Road going westbound toward I-10, you're going to experience maybe a 3 to 4 minute delay, but other than that, things look good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
If you have a company, you have a business, you have employees, or maybe you're the HR person or whatever, the office manager, and you have to deal with health insurance, dental, vision, life, disability, you know, human resource management, payroll, all of that. If things are going great, then, I mean, ignore me for a few seconds. If things are not going great, or if you wonder whether they could be even better, this is why you consult, you talk with Torgerson Consulting. Give them a call. Have them come in and look at what you're doing. We've been using them for 5 years and no obligation for that to have them look. They might come in and be like, nope, you're good. We can't do any better for you. Or they might come in and say like, well, here's where we could change things. Here's how we could improve it. Here's how we could do it cheaper, whatever. They have been great for us. They gave us choices we didn't have before, plans that were better than the ones we had before. Extraordinary customer service. I love the fact that they're always available to answer questions because we always have them. My wife and I are, well, she's more detail oriented than I, but you know, I'm a philosopher. She's an engineer. We ask questions, okay? And they always have good answers. Now, that miracle workers, you know, the marketplace is what it is, but they have great at really providing answers and giving us, again, better plans than we had before. For more than 25 years, in fact, this is their 25th year since 2001, they have been helping businesses like yours make this stuff go better. 5 years for us here at Cat Country and News Radio. For a no-obligation review, give them a call, 433-9996, or check them out online at tcbenefitsgroup.com. Back to the conversation about property taxes and what DC was saying yesterday. And, you know, look, I totally get the sort of two sides of all this. First of all, I should start from this. I haven't said it today. I have hated property taxes as long as I've understood what they were. They make no sense. Why does owning a piece of property obligate you to pay? Why does owning a more expensive piece of property obligate you to pay more? Why does, and especially in Florida where we have all these weird disparities, like, you know, maybe I've got a home that I've lived in for a long time, and so my home is the exact same home as my neighbor, built at the same time. And let's say my home is a $300,000 valuation home, but the actual retail value of that home is, you know, $500,000. He just bought it because he moved here from Alabama. Or, you know, he just bought his first home and he's lived here a long time. It doesn't matter. His property taxes are, you know, 40%, two-thirds more than mine. If his valuation is two-thirds more, why? Exact same service, exact same coverage, exact same property, in the same location, on the same street. Why is his more? Well, that's crazy. Because of our saver home. I mean, and do you owe more because you, what, use your house more? I mean, there's no justifying it. But here we have a situation where the legislature has made that case. Why should you have to pay rent to keep your home to the government? You know, it's the, what's the difference with having a lease? If you don't pay it, they take it. You know, you got to not pay it for 3 years, but then they take it. They give it to somebody else who will pay. That's rent. That's not ownership. I'm completely on board with that argument. But if that argument is true, well, and that justifies this proposal, well, what about the school payments? Why should they take my money, you know, take my house if I don't pay for the school? I mean, that's just the same thing. And what about if you own commercial property? What if you own a rental house? What if you own a business or a warehouse or whatever, or a gas station? You know, why should they be able to take that if you don't pay the rent? I mean, it's nuts. The system is nuts. On the other hand, talk to a lot of local officials, and I'll tell you what they tell me, which is, oh my God, Andrew, this is going to destroy us. Like, you have no idea how hard we work to keep costs down and keep pay down. Meanwhile, we have to compete with things like the upward pressure on salaries because of minimum wage price increases, because of, you know, insurance claims, because of the cost of insurance, medical insurance, all the things that go into paying for labor, plus all of the physical costs that ever since COVID have gotten completely out of hand. You know, if you can get the thing, you're paying double to triple for it, like a fire truck or a police cruiser or a traffic signal. You have no idea how impossible the standard is that the state is wanting to set for us. We will absolutely have to cut services if this goes into effect. I hear that too. What I would prefer to see is a serious adult conversation about, okay, if you really do need this much revenue, let's find it from a justifiable source. Somebody texts in, I like use taxes because then the people who are using the thing pay for it and the people who aren't using it don't pay for it. And if it's a use that you do indirectly, like, say, you know, the gas tax for a trucker, you don't pay it, the trucker does, but they pass it on to you through the form of retail prices. So I'm the same way. I don't think that people should be getting a free ride. I think you should pay for the services that you use. That makes sense to me. Are they just going to replace this with MSBUs for everything? I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I will say this. The mayor brought up a very interesting sort of legal question, which is the CRA, where all of the money above the baseline when the CRA was created goes back into development. Well, they bond against that revenue. And now what will happen since that revenue is going to be dramatically changed?
This doesn't even address the CRA, and I don't have lots of solutions to give you other than some problems that certainly arise. We have bonded dollars in the CRA. I'm curious that if those are bonded against future property tax revenues. So our CRAs get 95% of both the county and city's property tax. So I don't know what the legalities are of the citizens and the promise of bonded dollars in future years and how that impacts CRAs. Maybe that's something that'll be hashed out in these 72 hours. But that is something that I think is going to be up for a real discussion. I expect that isn't just going to be coming from cities and counties. It's going to be coming from some financial institutions that have been asked to bond dollars in future years on the promise of this being the format. And now all of a sudden overnight it not being the format. So I don't know where that will go, but that's something that we're going to be paying close attention to as well.
Yeah. What will happen? What's legally going to happen to bonds issued on the expectation of revenue from property taxes that are in the CRA? I don't know.
There is no reality of which you can have a cut of this size. I know it's easy to throw around vague terminology and say fraud, waste, and abuse. We had an audit, and I didn't find I didn't see $6.4 million anywhere in the audit that was conducted by the state. So the bottom line is there will be a loss of services if this goes through.
Yeah, of some sort. I mean, that's obvious. Of course, that's going to have to happen. 437-1620. We've got a bunch of texts in here. I'll try to get to some of them. Now is the time to consolidate city and county governments and services. Let's see. Assessed values have gone through the roof over the past 5 years. I would argue that the cost of inflation, more than the cost of inflation, where is all that extra money going? Somebody else says I'm all for the use-based assessments. Somebody else says the cut should be for all property, not just for homesteads. Yeah, I agree. Philosophically, you can't distinguish the two or the schools. And that's a total side question from, you know, who should pay for the schools anyway? Should it be everybody? Should it be only the people who have kids in the schools? As homeschoolers, I've always thought there was certainly at least a little bit of injustice in the idea that we actually pay to educate our own kids and then we pay to educate everybody else's kids. It's kind of a weird scenario. I mean, if my wife didn't have to stay home and educate our kids, you know how much money she'd make as an engineer? It's not just that we pay for it, it's that we cost avoid it, you know, right? And that's productive value to the economy. I mean, but we're still paying our property taxes. There's, again, all kinds of implications here. Somebody says the avoidance of the impact study wasn't an accident. Yeah, not finding out how this would affect it. As somebody going out of office, this is, you know, DeSantis trying to take advantage of for political purposes in the future. Let's see. School costs for the 18 years my kids were in high school. I had no issues paying the tax since I was using it, but I have no kids in school now and don't understand why I have to keep paying it. Other people are like, hey, you know, I know a woman who had to sell her house because she couldn't afford the property taxes and the insurance and everything else, I'm sure. Somebody else says, are we moving towards consumption or sales tax for revenue source to fund education and government services? Somebody says, they have the money. They just want to scare us so we can cave. They are elected to fix this. Why can't they spend their money better? So, you know, we're going to have a lot of the conversation about this over time. You know, we've got, 5 months before we have the actual vote. We'll see. 6:55 on News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Still rolling accident-free, even delay-free. Looks like I-10, I-110, everything is flowing smoothly this morning so far. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hi, I'm Terrence A. Gross. As many of you know, I am a local board-certified personal injury lawyer, and I have practiced in this community for almost 40 years. Our law firm handles only people that have been injured due to the negligence of another. Join me this Wednesday at 10:30 on Pep Talk as we discuss all aspects of personal injury law.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCoast Summit returns October 28th to Pensacola Beach. This is the Southeast's premier cybersecurity and technology conference. Get connected with top experts and explore the cutting-edge trends shaping our future. From AI to robotics to national security and healthcare tech. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Don't miss out. Secure your tickets today at itenwired.com.
For almost two decades, Bella Magazine has been celebrating the women of the greater Pensacola community. The tradition continues as Bella Magazine brings print to radio every month on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Tune in tomorrow at 9 to hear latest health and wellness, philanthropy, stories on local businesses and women, fashion and beauty, home and garden, food and wine, travel stories, and more. That's the Bella Magazine Show, tomorrow at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
Followed by the end of the world!
You don't need panic. You need information. News Radio 92.3.
Are my methods unsound? I don't see any method at all.
Martin machine talking about Kurtz or was he talking about DeSantis? I don't know which. 6:58 on News Radio 92.3. You know what I would love to know? And you can't because you can't run the hypothetical, but I would love to know what would have happened if this took place in a month after the budget's been signed and the vetoes have been given. You know, what would happen if nobody was under the threat of losing their project funding if they stand up to the governor? You know, fair question. I don't know the answer. Neither do you. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, an hours-long hostage situation continuing to unfold in California today. Two hostages have been released. This is being described as a bomb threat situation at a bank in Bakersfield. Police say there's still an unknown number of people in the bank, and the man that's been holding them there since yesterday apparently has a bomb strapped to his body. And Andrew, in New York, the NYPD thinks that dozens of people seen descending into New York City manholes may have been scavengers. At least three groups of people were caught on surveillance video recently climbing in the manholes. But I think we know what the real issue is.
Lizard people.
The Foot Clan.
The what now?
The Foot Clan.
The Foot Clan?
The Foot Clan.
I don't get that reference.
Ninja Turtles.
Oh.
Stream us at newsradio923.com. News Radio 92.3. WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.